Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McCusick. Got an interesting short episode for you today, approached by Hugh Cole, who wrote a great article out there we're going to give you a link for on Lamar Jackson and comparing him to Peyton Manning. And there have already been a lot of comparisons between the two, but I think this article is exceptionally well done and well written. Hugh, thanks for joining us today.
Well, thanks for having me, Ken. I'm excited to be here.
All right. Appreciate it. So, you know, one of the things that was a big point of emphasis for Peyton Manning is he always had the AFC South to beat up on, and very, very similar to Brady in the AFC East during a lot of his tenure.
And Mahomes, I think you could argue in his tenure now with the West. I mean, I think they've won what, like 7, 8, 9 in a row since he's been there. So,
to talk a little bit about how critical that division advantage is and maybe what kind of a handicap it is for Lamar in a relative sense.
Well, I think what's interesting is it didn't start out that way for Manning when he came in the league, right? I mean, he came into the, realigning of the divisions. And when he came in 1998, the Colts were in the AFC East with some of your listeners may remember the Bill Parcells Jets were in that division, the Jimmy Johnson Dolphins. I'd forgotten that Jimmy Johnson was the Dolphins coach. Mm-hmm. Flutie and Wade Phillips at the Bills, and Bill Belichick Pete Carroll onto Bill Belichick in the with the Patriots. So, some coaches there that are Hall of Fame level coaches.
Yeah. And,
yeah. Go ahead.
Very, very, very much so. It's a, there's been realignment and whatnot, but the other thing, even when they did move into the South, they had the Brunel led Jaguars at the beginning of that group.
At the beginning, and then that kind of morphed into the Titans, who I think were the more formidable opponent for them going forward. But I think Jim Irsay and his deal with the devil when they did the realignment must have had some sort of thing going on. But they got the Texans, the Jaguars, and the Titans with the realignment in 2002. And, that sort of went on to, I think, define a lot of Peyton's sort of pre-Super Bowl winning, story, which was he just got to beat up on an expansion team, a relatively recent expansion team, and then a Titans team that was kind of up and down through that time, that period of time.
I kind of forget sometimes. You've corrected me here and reminded me, but the Brunel-led Jaguars were still a central team playing with the Ravens along with the Titans for those early Ravens seasons. I always forget that from 06 to 01, yeah. 96 to 01, they were still around there. Yeah. So it didn't become the Colts' rival until later when the Jaguars weren't particularly good. They still had the Gerard Jaguars, I guess. The David Gerard Jaguars were pretty good.
Your memory is a lot better than mine is. I don't remember the Jaguars at that point.
Okay.
Yeah. So interesting, just to put some numbers to it. I mean, if you look at the, if you look at that AFC East sort of pre-2002, you're talking about a winning percentage within the teams that were not the Colts of 57% over that from 98 to 02. And if you take out two sort of outlier seasons with the, I think it was the Bills and the Patriots, you're up to 61%. So, I mean, a very formidable division that they were transferred out of and into a division that between 02 and 2006, the Texans, the Jags, and the Titans had a combined winning percentage of 43%. And then I think from 02, the Colts lost 6 games and then never lost more than 4 games in a season from, until 06 when Peyton finally broke through and won the Super Bowl. So
it was really a case where they hardly ever lost a regular season game for a long period in there. I mean, they didn't lose regular season games. They very typically would come down to one game against the New England Patriots to try and decide the AFC home field advantage.
Right, right. And if you sort of if you start with the supposition that you can't win the Super Bowl without getting to the playoffs, which is obviously true, and the best way of getting to the playoffs is to beat up on your divisional opponents, then there's a pretty well laid path for Peyton in those years.
Was there a weakness to that strategy generally, that they weren't battle hardened, that steel hadn't sharpened steel at that point? Steel hadn't sharpened, butter had not sharpened steel.
Yeah, yeah. There certainly is an argument to that. I mean, I'd argue that the Titans were probably a pretty tough opponent when they faced them a couple times every year. And, you know, there's something to probably be said, and we'll get to this a little bit later. There's something to be said probably for the Brady Manning rivalry sharpening, or at least should have sharpened his sort of that, you know, that he Brady should have been the iron that sharpened the Manning iron, right. You know, at some point.
Well, let's go ahead and jump into that rivalry next. Is just how important was that, and what role did that play?
Yeah, so I was really interested looking back on sort of the Manning Brady stuff with just the sheer volume of games that they had. And as we mentioned, they were only in the same division for a year, and that was Brady's first in the league. Yet they played 9 times between 2001, when Brady came in, and 2006. Which, to put some perspective to it, you know, Joe Burrow and Lamar have only played 5 times, I believe, in the time that they've been in the league, and they're division rivals, so they play twice a year.
Some injuries have reduced that number.
That's right. Yeah, injuries between both Lamar and Burrow, I think, this past year.
And you're going back to, in terms of the Manning and Brady, it included postseason games as well in that 9.
That's correct. And I think that's part of the reason that that number is as high as it is because they faced each other, I think it's either 3 or 4 times in the postseason of those, and some pretty famous, you know, postseason matchups where Brady won the first 6, including both the regular season and the postseason, and knocked Manning out, I believe, in both the Super Bowl runs that they made in 01 and 02, maybe 02, 03, the Patriots run. Brady knocked Manning out in both of those runs. Really just had the best of them from the day that he entered the league until Manning finally broke through.
Yeah. Now, does that remind you of anybody right there?
Yes, it certainly does. And I think, you know, Mahomes, I think, is probably the closest Lamar has to that, although they've only faced each other 4 times. It's been almost entirely Pat Mahomes in those matchups, with the one exception in the overtime win a couple years ago.
And it's not exactly the same, and I know it's not the point you're trying to make, so I don't want to redirect this conversation, but even in the early Flacco versus Roethlisberger years, definitely a fairly one-sided rivalry until Flacco started to get the better hand out of it for about 3 years, maybe. The 2011 Ravens, I think, of being is the team that really turned it around against the Steelers.
Right, exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Maybe we've talked a little bit about injuries here, and it's not like Manning was uninjured for his entire career. He, of course, missed a season with a neck injury and then was released at that point, I believe, to go to free agency or allowed to go. And that's when he signed the enormous contract with Denver.
Right. I don't remember exactly how it worked, but he was out for, I think, an entire season at one point, where he was let go by the Colts, and then I don't remember, signed, I guess, with the Broncos, I believe, after. I'm not sure if he signed and then took a year off with the Broncos, or whether he was just out of the league for a year and unsigned. Maybe you can recall that, but I think the more interesting point is that up until he finally broke through and won that Super Bowl, he never missed a game, regular season or postseason. He was healthy for every game. And again, if winning a Super Bowl is a numbers game, just, the best ability is availability. Lamar this past year, which is something that we could certainly talk about, were there things that the Ravens did this past year that you think sort of helped to keep him on the field. But, you know, the last 2 years prior to this past season, that was certainly the narrative of the Lamar season was season ending injuries.
Yeah, it's, I mean, I you know, there have been lots of people who claim that Lamar's play style is going to create more injuries. I'm not sure that that's really true. There's like nobody knows how to get tackled like Lamar Jackson. So it's a lot, becomes a lot of questions is he running into contact downfield that's causing a lot of these injuries? That's largely not true in Jackson's career. Largely it's been quarterback hits in the pocket, which are everybody's problem at quarterback, not just his. But he's obviously had some serious injuries, and when his wheels are gone or when his wheels are out, they're out. And that's a big part of his game that's lost.
It's true. It's interesting though, because I believe you did a podcast prior to the playoffs this year where you talked about how the offense this past season was a little bit less Lamar running focused, and maybe going into the playoffs using Lamar's legs on designed runs was maybe a way of kind of introducing a new element into the playoff side of things. So I do wonder whether or not this, you know, during the regular season, if there's a way to take some of that sort of part of his game down a couple notches, leave it off film, and then ramp it back up in the playoffs when things really matter, if that's a way that they could potentially keep him a little bit fresher throughout the most important time of the season.
Yeah, it's an interesting topic, certainly. Him navigating the pocket with the kind of maneuverability he has, the kind of escapability he has, is still going to be very important to the passing game, even without running. They have changed since 2019. They've definitely changed, because in 2019, they ran out of pistol. And what that just meant schematically is typically Lamar's area of taking his trouble to the defense was on the outside. So that the back, in this case, Mark Ingram, was receiving those read options for a run up the middle. And when he didn't, when Lamar pulled the ball, typically Lamar is headed to the outside. Now it's much more movement goes into it, or in the later Roman years, much more movement went into it. And Lamar's really a center threat. Now that wasn't a terrible thing. I don't think Lamar really took much in the way of injuries during his time running the ball up the middle. And he had a very good record of certainly running opponents out of position. And I don't think there's any arguing that the Ravens run game overall has been very successful with Jackson being the catalyst for it. But there is some risk there. There's some additional risk probably for Jackson running middle as opposed to the large number of carries in 2019 where he just ran out of bounds before he's touched.
Yeah, and you're right. There's a lot of luck that goes into staying healthy in this league, right? I mean, these guys take hits that you look at sometimes and you wonder how they're still on the field, and yet there they are the next play ready to go. I mean, the one that stands out to me is the play against the two-point conversion to Flowers in the right hand side of the end zone, where Lamar was essentially jumping into the air, getting hit sort of below the waist, and completing that pass. I mean, that could have gone wrong in a million different ways, and yet he made it through. So, so there's obviously some luck to it. You know, the interesting thing about Lamar, you certainly don't want to. You know, Peyton and Lamar are very different players, right? Obviously, Peyton was sort of the field general, the guy that had to stand in the pocket, deliver, read the defense. Times against Ray Lewis were obviously, you know, epic sort of cerebral battles on the field. And Lamar's that dynamic athlete that just has every, you know, sort of unparalleled in the league now, and maybe even unparalleled sort of throughout the history of the NFL. So you obviously don't want to take that away from him. That's a very key part of his game. But to the extent that you can potentially limit some of that, or at least do what you can to reduce the risk, it's all about risk mitigation at the end of the day. And that's certainly something I think that they should try and do.
I don't think that's unreasonable at all. And I think that in some sense, we see that from Mahomes in terms of him doing a little more running in the postseason. But I also think it's so central to what the Ravens are trying to do offensively. The whole notion of RPOs, most of Jackson's play action is forward facing. So if you had, I have three categories for play action. There's turn your back play action, which is the typical Flacco statuesque quarterback kind of play action where you oftentimes will boot directly off a snap, but you don't have to. You can have a straight drop with turn your back, but the quarterback has to reacquire the field. Well, you know, today's mobile quarterbacks, it's done much more often with one of two types of checks. Well, either checking to the through the mesh point, which is a typical RPO in the way we think of it, or having a more generic set of forward facing fakes where they make some sort of hand check without ever turning their back. And a quarterback like Flacco had some of those, but he had many more of the turn your back plays. And that's not Lamar's forte. And I'm not sure that it's a limitation of Lamar's to reacquire the field, because I think it is probably something he could improve with as he gets more experience, but it's something that they have not really tried to have him do too often. And part of that is just taking the snap at the line of scrimmage. If you take the snap out of shotgun, it limits the opportunity. You can do it out of pistol, but those opportunities don't come up too often to truly turn your back for play action.
All right.
You know, as long as we're on this topic, let's talk a little bit about system, because one of the things Manning had going for him was a very long relationship with Tom Moore.
Right. One that I had completely forgotten about when I looked back on it. When Manning came into the league, he had Tom Moore as his offensive coordinator, and had Moore as his offensive coordinator through 06 when he finally broke through and won the Super Bowl that year. And then until Moore retired in 2009. So just an incredible amount of consistency between the two of them, a relationship that obviously grew over time and grew sort of to the great benefit of the Colts offense. From a DVOA perspective, I've got the numbers here in front of me. They went from they were the 25th ranked when he came into the league, and moved up, and they were in the top 10 five times between in the early 2000s, and then in the top five three times. So they were, you know, 20 plus DVOA teams by the time that they were headed into those Super Bowl years. And, you know, I think it's hard to argue that a lot of that wasn't because of the fact that these guys were developing this relationship, and Peyton was, you know, came in as a relatively speaking NFL ready quarterback, but you know, the scheme and the system sort of was designed to over the course of, you know, the next few years, sort of develop him as that, you know, stand at the line of scrimmage and direct traffic and figure out where to go and put the ball in motion and off you go. So that was something I think that developed pretty well between the two of them.
Yeah. He's by the end of his career, even by about 2006 or so, I mean, Manning was a quarterback that, didn't you know it's possible to get THC shipped right to your door? Mood delivers premium 100% federally legal THC directly to you. I'm talking about delicious, high-potency gummies, top-shelf flower, home-baked cookies, vapes, anything you'd find at a dispensary, you can now order online and have it shipped quickly, discreetly, and conveniently right to your door. And every Mood product is made from pesticide-free cannabis grown on America's best small farms at prices that won't destroy your wallet. Best of all, not only is every Mood product backed by a 100-day satisfaction guarantee, but as I mentioned, listeners get 20% off their first order with code RAVENS. So head to mood.com/ravens, check out their online dispensary, and let Mood help you discover your perfect mood. And don't forget to use promo code RAVENS when you check out to save 20% on your first order.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Could do a lot in a very short amount of time. He could redirect the defense. And this is from, I'm talking about from the snap to the time the ball was released. He could fake a handoff, fake pump a throw, know exactly where his receiver is going to be, and then hit him on a little 6-yard slant And, you know, all this was developing so quickly that, you know, it's very different from what Lamar has ever been to date.
Right. And I mean, I think you could spend an entire podcast talking about why that is. I think part of the reason, part of the argument, my argument anyway, is that, you know, when you're on your third offensive coordinator in six seasons, I don't think that doesn't help. It certainly didn't hurt in 2019. It didn't hurt this past year. Those were obviously historically good offenses, but, you know, I think that there's an argument to be made. I think there's an argument to be made in any team, whether it's, you know, the private sector or sports, that just time and developing that relationship between two people that are very good at what they do benefits both sides and benefits the overall output.
Yeah. I can't argue with that. I mean, I do also think that Lamar having this long relationship with Roman and an offense that's built for him, I would argue that he's had that most of his career. Monken is a change in terms of exactly how that offense works, but he's definitely had a good situation, much different from Flacco in terms of Flacco changing every year the offensive coordinator.
Yeah, and I think that people probably don't give enough credit to John Harbaugh for keeping that sort of through line going in that way. I mean, they did change offensive coordinators, but to your point, they kept a lot of the, I mean, you've said it a bunch of times here previously, they kept a lot of these same elements from the Roman offense in the Monken offense and then just sort of developed around that and expanded on it.
Yeah. But you're not allowed to give Harbaugh credit for anything because Baltimore fans is certainly a percentage of them that want to have the fire Harbaugh time no matter what. And I found recently I can't even say anything nice about the Ravens' playoff success without having, well, they can't win the Super Bowl. They can't seem to get a game. Well, it's been 10 years and they won blah, 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 you know, kind of thing.
Yeah.
I mean, the Ravens' playoff success has been remarkable. Whether you're talking about the Harbaugh history, the entire team, whatever you want to think. They have, since they came into the league, they have the third most playoff wins. And this is a team that was basically starting from scratch. They weren't quite an expansion team, but they were pretty freaking damn close because they were left with a cap hell team that Cleveland gave them. Forget the talent on the team, which was okay, I guess, for inheriting a football team. But the Ravens are basically starting over, and they had to rebuild to get that 2000 team. And they were still actually dealing with some of the salary cap problems that existed when they came to Baltimore. So I think it's their record of not having ever the number one draft pick, but also the number two or three draft pick in 28 years is absolutely remarkable.
We are more than spoiled by the consistency of our football team ownership all the way down.
And yet there's still some people who want to say, well, but look at the last 4 years or look at the last 6 years and they haven't done this and they haven't done that. But yeah. You got to be patient with the actual Super Bowls because there's a fair amount of luck involved. And all I'll say about this is that if you play the game craps, every great craps roll in history had an end to it. Okay. I mean, if you eventually roll a seven and you're done and the abruptness of it is very similar to losing a playoff game to end a football season. You usually have a lot of money on the table and you know, things go away very quickly. And it's just the nature of the game. There's going to be a fair amount of having to negotiate traffic and get through. And, you know, we're witnessing a couple quarterbacks in the last 20 years that have had a great record of getting through that muck. And Jackson so far has not proven to be that guy. Flacco, in a lot of ways, was that guy. It doesn't mean we like, you know, Lamar Jackson any less than Flacco. Jackson is the better quarterback, but he, so far he hasn't been the better playoff quarterback.
Right, exactly. So one other thing I just wanted to sort of harp on or talk about with regards to sort of the Peyton side of things is he also had, you know, a consistently good staff underneath Tom Moore. And a quality, you know, he came into the league with Bruce Arians, future head coach, as his quarterback coach, and transitioned to Jim Caldwell, who was also a future head coach as his quarterback coach. And then if you look at the underlings for Tom Moore, a lot of them are guys that stay around for 4 or 5 years at a time and are sort of just part of the overall system that is, you know, sort of grooming and creating this almost sort of like, you know, hive mind between everybody in the building that everybody understands sort of what needs to happen and how we need to go. And so I think You know, the Ravens, you could probably argue, have that on the defensive side of the football over their history. They've been able to, you know, sort of unplug offensive or defensive coordinators and send them off to head coaching positions and then either promote from within or bring someone in that has sort of a similar mindset or a similar scheme and is going to tweak or, you know, maneuver around the edges, but still maintain what I would sort of call a consistently good to great defensive side of the football for throughout.
Yeah, the DNA has definitely stayed there. And even though the exact scheme has changed a lot on defense and very drastically from coach to coach, and Nolan we had Marvin Lewis, who was a very much a dime and quarter guy, but he adapted to whatever he had extremely well, you know, including going to a 3-4 in the Ravens' very first year from a 4-3 in season, which is the worst thing you can have to do because of injuries, but he did it. And if you go look at all of them, I mean, Rex Ryan and Wink Martindale were extreme blitzers, but there's been other guys in between who have not been, who, by the way, when you have that guy and it's not successful like it was last year with McDonald, you really get frustrated by that as a fan. You go, when are they ever going to get up there and run another blitz? You know, they can't give them all day to make sandwiches in the pocket.
Right.
But you know, there was a lot of that DNA estate. And I think, you know, the nice thing about the Ravens is it has been largely through great players. And I think that, you know, we've got two on the team right now who match up very well with the early Ravens, obviously in Roquan and Hamilton, matching up with Lewis and Reed in terms of a long time.
Right. And so I think just getting to the part of the article that may be the closest thing to a hot take that I can really come up with. But that was a contention that it was probably better in the, I'd call it the medium term, maybe through the end of the Lamar contract, that they lost Mike McDonald this go around and held on to Jeff Monken rather than the other way around. I would say that the ability to replace, you know, McDonald was obviously a huge talent. Replacing him is going to be very difficult. But if there's anything the Ravens have shown, they've been able to come in behind these guys and keep up the quality of the defense. But I think keeping Monken around, building an offensive staff and an offensive side of the football that has some consistency to it and can sort of grow and groom some of the younger talent around Lamar and allow Lamar to really begin to master a system under one offensive coordinator is going to pay big dividends going forward.
That's an interesting idea. I could adapt to that. I think, you know, what's happened to the defense is much deeper in terms of losing a lot of quality coaches. It's still the natural consequence of having a great football team is you're first of all, look at what Harbaugh has done. He put together this coaching staff. That's in his silo, guys. That's not anybody else's hiring responsibility. So he hired every one of those guys. And we heard a little bit from EDC at the Combine this year talking about how he'd been involved in the hiring of coordinators, which is just the right level at which he should be, you know, involved as the most senior non-head coach positions on the coaching side. But below that, that's all Harbaugh making those calls and probably doing most of the interviewing. I'm sure they have other people who interview all these guys, but it's all Harbaugh's, you know, bailiwick to do that in much the same way that Harbaugh, while he can sit there and have his opinion on who the Ravens ought to draft in the third or fourth round, there's a point at which EDC probably does not want that advice anymore. He's, you know, particularly if you're talking about a fifth round cornerback that Harbaugh may not have even seen play, you know, whether this was a good pick or not is not going to really matter. But Zach Sealer is a player I would bet, you know, maybe because he was in Michigan, but it may have been a player that Harbaugh had never seen play. There's a seventh round lineman. There's no reason for him to have an opinion on that.
Right.
If he wants to have an opinion on Ben Cleveland or on Devin Duvernay, who, you know, was drafted a little higher there, well, that's okay. But at some point, that's what the two roles are responsible for. And one is scouting talent, and the other is, you know, hopefully developing it and building a coaching staff. And I would not in any way minimize the importance of Harbaugh's building of the Ravens coaching staff, nor how important it'll be this year to try and get the right people in position to rebuild that defense.
Oh, absolutely. Sure. I mean, they lost, as you know, a lot of talent on that side of the football. So we'll see.
Let's talk about the cap a little bit, because it's another area where the game has changed a little bit. And I saw you had some great numbers on the cap. I want to let you go through that. But I also want to talk about the change from a five-year hold to a four-year hold before free agency, because I think that that's actually a big thing and is cap related.
Well, sure. I'll definitely let you talk about that piece. You're certainly the expert on that more so than I am, but I'll just run through a couple numbers here. And just looking back in the 2006 season, which is the season that that Peyton finally broke through and won his Super Bowl, I'll just read down sort of the list of the top five or six quarterback salaries and what percentage of the cap they took up. Carson Palmer was 13% of the cap. Peyton was 10% of the cap that year. He was higher for a few years before, but it came down to 10% that year. Tom Brady was 14%. Brett Favre was 12%. And then you get down to guys like Mike Vick and Drew Brees, Vince Young, who were sort of 9%, 8%, and 7%. You flip that forward and you look at guys like Joe Burrow, who is 11% coming in this year, up to almost 18% in 25. And then, you know, down to Herbert, Justin Herbert, 14% next year, Lamar, 12.5% this year, and then up to 17% next year. So, you know, you're talking about 5 to 6 percentage points on the cap that these quarterback contracts in today's world are taking up versus what they were taking up back in the Peyton era.
Okay, I want to make a couple of points on that. So first of all, everybody is playing under the same set of advantages and disadvantages. So we're playing poker with the same wild cards. Maybe think of it that way. So you're in the case of okay. In the case of Manning, additionally, there was this 4-year structure of free agency, which probably could have created larger amounts going to franchise quarterbacks who'd been there a long time, because you weren't eligible until after year five to be a free agent. And that changed in the 2011 CBA. And people don't remember that, but there was a mad scramble that year as they changed it, because a bunch of 50-year players, prospective 50-year players, immediately became free agents all at once, including for the Ravens, Marshall Yanda. And so they had to re-sign him at that exact moment. I think Ben Grubbs, I'm trying to remember if Ben Grubbs was lost as a result of that. But anyway, they had a whole bunch of players who had to be dealt with immediately at that time. With regard to the rest of the league, I would think, you know, unless the argument is that it's very hard to be led by a great quarterback in one of the two cap eras, I'm not sure I agree based on the fact that everybody has the same advantages and disadvantages.
No, I agree with that. I do think that the comparison between eras is a little, obviously it puts a lot more focus or a lot more pressure on your front office to do their job, to find value at positions and to, you know, to know where to spend and where not to spend over the course of the entire roster. I think what it does, interestingly, as we sort of move it forward in the conversation, is it puts an enormous amount of value or importance on the quarterbacks in their rookie deal. Yes. And you sort of look back over the last, you know, X number of Super Bowls, it's been at least 5 or 6 in a row where one of those, you know, coveted Super Bowl spots has been taken up by a quarterback on their rookie deal. Now, they don't tend to win those games, those Super Bowl games. So, but they get there, and it, you know, it sort of, it pushes out those players like a Lamar, who's not on his rookie deal anymore.
Well, but that would be an argument for exactly the other thing, right? That it's maybe for and against, but if you're saying you can get there more often with a rookie quarterback, but they can't win it, or you can get there with a veteran quarterback. And it's been, obviously the league has been dominated by one player for the last 20 years. So it's been one, and you know, you can argue Mahomes is the second coming of that now. It's been so long since the AFC has had a non-big quarterback win anything in terms of the Super Bowl, right? Has there been any since 2000? Has there been one? Flacco is the outlier.
I believe that's correct. I'm straining my brain here,
but yeah, I'm trying to think of who's won it. Otherwise, the NFC has had a couple of wins. They've beaten Mahomes, obviously, but I don't think the AFC has had anyone but Flacco outside of the big three, and I'm including Roethlisberger in that group now.
Right.
Roethlisberger won on his first contract and never again. So that was a you know a famous one. But Manning waited until what his eighth? No, it was later than 98 was his rookie year, so it was his ninth season, I guess, before he won the and then Brady started winning his second season.
That's right. So I think, you know, the hope has to be that guys like that, the, you know, Lamar can continue to vanquish the Trevor Lawrences and the CJ Strouds of the world who were playing on that rookie contract. And then, you know, breakthrough versus the Mahomes and the Allens of the world who are in the same boat as he is.
Yeah. All right. Well, it's a really nice piece you wrote. Let's tell people where that is. Where can they find that piece?
Sure. It's at my website, whatliesbefore.com is the place you can go to find that. I'm also on Twitter at Hugh Cole. And if you want to, you know, DM me or shoot me a message there, I can send a link to it for sure.
You have your DMs open, you?
Yes.
Okay. All right. Outstanding. Thanks for coming on the show. Really appreciate that. Other folks out there, if you'd like to come on the show and do one of the current historical series this offseason, which is Recollections. And the format is this. Pick a player from Ravens history who is not at the very top tier, allowing some people to take some pretty high players like Derek Mason. Adalis Thomas is kind of a player who's been gone for a while, who is a good one who's been taken. Jarrett Johnson is the player everybody seems to want. But take somebody who's not at the top level and give me like three memories of that player. And then we'll have a little free association discussion of this. But it's intended to be about a 15-minute discussion, some shorter content for people who want that. And just keep the off-season going in terms of having some good Ravens content between drafts and Friday morning GM shows and other shows like we're doing here with you about this. Anyway, DMs are always open. Hit me up. Give me your player choice, and I'll get back to you very quickly, and we'll discuss scheduling. You, thanks again for coming on.
Thanks for having me.
And we'll talk to you next time on Film Study.
Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.